Hey, good evening, Steele.
Good evening, Dave. I'm on top of the world.
Oh man, big news, Steele. My parents, as we speak, are in the Wisconsin Dells.
Are you serious? They're at the
Yeah,
Dells?
man. They're at the Dells right now.
What are they doing up there? Water park adventuring?
Oh, I asked them, and they said all the water parks are closed because it's October.
Oh,
So
yeah, I
basically, the
forgot.
worst time you can possibly go to the Dells. So I don't know why you'd go there right now.
Hey, the wilderness has an indoor. They've got like five huge indoor areas. They should go to wilderness.
Oh, geez.
Kalahari.
I'll send my dad a text right now because they're probably just sitting watching TV or something. So, other big news, I got another friend still.
Fantastic. I'm excited to meet him. Who do we have this week, Dave?
This is Matt Brown. Say hi. Say something, Matt.
Hey guys, hey Steel.
Aloha, Matt. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, Matt was my neighbor for a few years down in Mesa. We're just bringing on all my neighbors the last few episodes.
Sounds like you
The
really
whole
worked
block.
hard to make friends there in Mesa.
Oh yeah, we delivered cookies door to door, all that kind of stuff still.
Wow. What was the context for that to happen? Was this Girl Scout deliveries?
Yeah, I was a troop leader for a little while. Made a lot of money. It was great.
Cool. Singing Santa program? I'm trying to guess what situation would lead you to deliver cookies.
Hey, it's just neighborly. That's what you do.
Oh, okay.
You move into a new neighborhood, you're like, hey, who wants some cookies? We're friendly. I got a nice beard. That kind of thing.
All right.
But still, even better, we're having another episode of Off the Chain. And we've got some good stuff to talk about. We've got some small talk. We got a new segment called OTC Debate.
Whoa,
We're going to debate stuff.
that's gonna be really good.
And of course, Unchained Melody is one that I'm pretty excited about. And also Book Wisdom, I'm excited about. I'm excited about the whole episode, man.
It's a good way to start. Just downhill from here.
But I went camping the other day. It was a little bit chilly. So I was thinking about the times when I was the coldest I've ever been in my life. I think you have. I think this has happened to you before. You've been very cold. Is
Yeah,
that
it's so
true?
true. I mean, I live in Wisconsin, so there have been days when I go outside and it feels like my snot freezes in my nose, and it's sunny outside, which is a very incon it's an incon I don't know what that word is. It's a difficult feeling to have.
Sure.
But I've never spent overnight out of doors in a Wisconsin winter. I think that's foolhardy. But I will. I made a foolish choice when I was a freshman in college. I'd gone through the first like 6 or 8 weeks of class, and I was thinking, I need to get in touch with nature. And so I decided that I would take my
Sure, yeah.
bike and just go camp in a Provo Canyon in the first weekend of October.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't really tell anybody what my plan was. I took a jug of water and a blanket, and I biked up Provo Canyon and decided I'd find a campground and just sleep there. And I remember laying down under the tree under this blanket thinking, man, it's getting kind of cold. And I sort of tried to fall asleep. And I fell asleep, and probably an hour and a half later, I woke up and I was so cold. And so I saw that some people had abandoned their campsite and left a fire going. Or not really a fire, this was like some embers. So I went up to the embers and I blew on them, so I got them going a little bit. And I just curled up like I was spooning the fire pit, basically, and
Good
fell asleep
move.
again there. And made it a few more hours that time. Just kept waking up, freezing cold. Finally, probably at first dawn, I was like, I'm done with this. I gotta get up, gotta get moving. Got my limbs moving, biked back down the canyon, coldest bike ride I've ever done. And I'm waving to people on the bike path, and everyone's giving me these really strange looks. And I'm like, oh, maybe it's because I'm on a bike and it's early in the morning. I get back to my dorm room, and our mutual friend Alan was asleep in my bed. And I was like, what's going on? Because he would come and hang out in our room a lot. And since I was gone for the night, he decided, hey, I'm upgrading. So I was like, Alan, get out of the bed. So I went down to the bathroom, and I look in the mirror when I go to the bathroom, and my face is like blackened with soot. I just looked like a wreck. I was like, oh no. And my hair was all sticking up and matted. And so I tried to wash it out, but it was in pretty deep. Like the smoke had gotten in my pores. Came back to the bed and just slept like all morning, and Alan was there on the floor. And I just thought, what an idiot move. I mean, that was so foolhardy. I probably could have died.
Because anytime you're having the coldest night of your life, it should be because someone else is making you do it rather than you're making the choice. It has to be someone's had this plan, you're going camping and it's super cold.
Yeah.
So
it wouldn't have been as bad if I had maybe brought a sleeping bag or another layer of clothing or a hat or just something. You know, it was first weekend of October in the Utah mountains. It gets cold at night and I just wasn't prepared. But I got so in touch with nature. I touched it at its icy heart.
Yeah, and it touched your face, gave you a wonderful complexion.
Yeah, it really did.
So what about you, Matt? Did you follow the slogan, be prepared on the coldest night of your life?
Yeah, so the coldest night of my life was on a Boy Scout camp out. And so I'm from Arizona. I've lived in the Phoenix area pretty much my whole life. I don't have a lot of cold nights that I can recollect. Mm-hmm. But this one, we went up kind of by Dave's new neck of the woods, and we went to the second highest mountain in Arizona called Mount Baldy. I think it's about 11,000 feet, something like that. And it's on Apache reservation land, and so not very many people are allowed to go up to the top because it's sacred. And so we got like this big kind of jamboree thing, and all these scout troops from all over were allowed to go up to the top. And so
nothing says respect for the sacred like hundreds of Boy Scouts, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, we're going to leave it better than we found it, right? And
yeah.
So we go up to – we climb like all night. We start, you know, and I think it took like 7 hours or something. And I don't know if they thought that it was going to take longer than that because we finally got up to the top at about 3 a.m. and we're supposed to have this morning fireside kind of thing and this spiritual moment as the sun rises at the top of Mount Baldy. But at 3 a.m., you got some time to kill. And so we're all really tired. We've been hiking all night. And our scout leader, I remember specifically telling us, do not bring a sleeping bag. And I also don't know, because it was probably warm down at the bottom, I don't know if I brought a jacket or not. I really don't remember that. But I remember getting up to the top. And so up at the top, it was true to its name, there's a bald slope above the tree line, and there is no protection from the wind. It's just like you're on this grassy field, and there's a glacier actually up at the top too, probably one of the only glaciers in Arizona, I would assume. And so we're right below this little glacier, and we're on this bald face, and there's like Boy Scouts everywhere just curled up, shivering. Some had lit fires occasionally, like across this field, and we're just laying as close to the fire as we can without getting burned or burning our clothes or whatever. And it was terrible. It was one of the worst things ever. I don't think anybody could feel any spiritual experience once the sun did. And
it sounds kind of post-apocalyptic there, man.
Oh yeah, it was like we look like refugees after, you know, some war battle had torn through the mountain, and it was rough. That was the beginning of my tenuous relationship with scouting.
Yeah.
Right there.
Did you get the eagle? Did you finish up?
I did. I got it.
Nice.
He planted trees up on the bald spot. That's what he did for society. No one. Yeah. Never again. Never again.
For future generations. Yeah.
Oh, it's always scouts. There's always like a scoutmaster who's like, hey, let's go do our Klondike camp out. There's like 4 feet of snow. It's going to be a great idea.
And there's like 12 teenagers. It's going to be great for everybody.
We'll build some character this weekend. The kids will love it.
Yeah. You know, when you're in these real cold situations, the thing you're supposed to do to conserve body warmth is take off all your clothes and huddle real tight. One of those scout leaders.
Yeah.
So my story involves huddling very close with a bunch of teenage boys when I was in my 20s.
Nice.
It was when I was working at Anasazi.
I thought you were going to say tourism, Thailand or something.
But when the seasons change, you bring different equipment out there, and it's all super primitive. And when it gets cold, obviously they give you a sleeping bag, and it's always kind of a crappy one. But right before the seasons change, all you have is a wool blanket. And so this week, all we had was wool blankets, and the temperature like was dropping rapidly. Every night it was so cold. What you'd do is you'd heat a rock in the fire. You'd bring it back to the bed with you and you'd hold this rock until it got cold and you'd put it back in the fire. But finally one night I just said, it was so cold. The rule was you're not supposed to sleep around the fire because, you know, the sparks and stuff, like you could get burned. It's a problem. And I was like, screw it, guys. And me and seven boys just slept in a circle around this fire. It was so cold. But like the more mature boys and me, we'd have a pile of wood behind us. So we'd wake up every like half an hour and stoke the fire. And it was so cold. And that was the only way we survived. But there was the girl trail walker, the girl leader in the group. She couldn't sleep near the boys. It was also against the rules. So she's off just freezing in the corner, no fire. And in the morning, the one kid in the group that was kind of like the wiener jerk kid, he had like jumped over another boy to get closer to the fire. So this boy wakes up, he's shivering, and the jerk boy is like nice and warm. It was awesome.
Wow. The woman survived?
She did. Okay. She did.
It was a little anticlimactic. I was wondering. You didn't mention her again at the end of the story.
No, it didn't. Like, obviously, none of us cared about her. It was only me and the boys that our only concern was ourselves. We're like, oh, yeah, I bet she's really cold because it is inhumanly cold. I don't understand how anyone's surviving, but no one thought, like, maybe we should build a second fire for her. No, we're worried about ourselves.
Coldest night of your life, both temperature and emotional.
Yeah, I can't even remember who the other trail walker was. I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure she remembers who you were. Wow.
Well, guys, we have some small talk.
I'm excited. This is one of my favorite segments, Dave. It's become a regular in our household.
Are you using this in your daily life?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It doesn't work, but I just try it.
So Matt, the idea is, of course, we're sharing just kind of a short story that you can then regurgitate in a social situation, making yourself seem more interesting, more funny, or more intelligent. Actually,
I need this. This is for me, for sure.
So do you have anything for us, Matt? What's your story?
Okay, so I saw an article about the French Scrabble champion, the World Scrabble Championship, French World Scrabble. I don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, so this guy just won the French World Scrabble Championship. His name is Nigel Richards, and he's actually a New Zealander. He lives in Malaysia currently. And if you look at the picture of him in this article that I read, he looks kind of like some Appalachian, you know, wanderer or something. He has a long beard, weird glasses. And so the thing about it is that makes it interesting is he does not speak French. And 9 weeks before these championships, he memorized the French travel dictionary. And there's about 368,000 words in the French Scrabble dictionary. So he memorized them, and what he has is basically like perfect recall almost, and he was able to just use that and, you know, blast through these championships. The other thing about it is it just keeps going. So he's actually won before Scrabble championships before. He's a three-time champion of the English Word Scrabble championships.
Nice.
And then also he's won the U.S. National Scrabble Championships 5 times and then the United Kingdom Scrabble Open 6 times. So some of these different ones use different Scrabble dictionaries. And so he has also, in his time as a Scrabble competitor, he has memorized the International English Scrabble Dictionary, which has 280,000 words.
Holy cow.
And then the North American Scrabble Dictionary, which has roughly 187,000 words. And so he just memorizes them and he goes with it.
I can't think of a better use of your time or your intellect than that. That's fantastic.
That could also double to the limits. This guy, Nigel, is at the limits of human accomplishment. He's incredible.
It's unreal. know, the thing that I thought was interesting about it too is I am terrible at Scrabble. And anybody who knows me, Dave, you know, you've spoken with me before, you were probably impressed by my vast vocabulary. But when it comes to playing Scrabble, like, my wife won't even play with me anymore because I'm so bad. Like, all I can do is, like, it's horrible. It's just embarrassing. And she actually gets angry at me. She's like, is that honestly the best that you can do? And so it's just humiliating for me. And what they've kind of suspected, so, like, people like me who don't play Scrabble much or play it just, you know, casually have – always had this theory that, like, having a good vocabulary is a key to playing Scrabble. But what the theory in competitive Scrabble playing is has long been that it serves you better to have a mathematical mind. And so that's kind of what they've been looking into. This guy, they've done a study on him. A Cortex Journal has done a study on him, and they found that that's actually what it is. He basically, you know, he just has pattern recognition and visual familiarity instead of a vocabulary measure. And so that's actually kind of the key to his success and to other people who play Scrabble professionally, wow, their success.
You know, my sister-in-law is a huge Scrabble player. She's very competitive. She's very good. And she was telling me something about this story. I didn't get all the detail, but she was saying essentially the top Scrabble players in the world don't even need to know the language. They just, yeah, memorize the books. And once they know the books, mm-hmm, it's all Scrabble strategy and just playing big letter words. When she came to Madison, the first thing that she did was try to go to a Scrabble meetup at a grocery store parking lot, but no one else turned up. So she was pretty disappointed about Madison's Scrabble scene.
Well, if there's one thing to make a word game more fun, that's to introduce math into it. So that sounds really appealing.
Yeah.
So I've got something. I recently read an article about achievement beards. Are either of you guys familiar with these?
You grow a beard to celebrate that you've done something great?
Kind of.
That's my guess.
It's a little bit more out there in the ether than that. But yes, so essentially they showed a picture of David Letterman with just this huge post late night beard. And it's just, wow, you know, his hair's still well groomed, but his beard's just gigantic. And they went on to talk about all these late night hosts, all these people that have grown beards. Yeah. Essentially saying, I've dominated whatever it was that I wanted to do. Now I can grow a gigantic beard.
Now, is it mostly men that's doing this, or are there women that have jumped on the bandwagon?
It's primarily, yeah, you need the Y chromosome mostly.
We were talking about the state fair last week or whatever, and I saw somebody at our county fair that I'm pretty sure had an achievement beard.
So what the thing is about an achievement beard is Nigel's beard that he grew to play Scrabble, that's not an achievement beard. That's kind of like I'm socially uncomfortable. I'm letting myself go. And then there's like the hipster beard, which probably would more describe my beard. I'm a young man and I'm cool. I have a beard. Achievement beard is the mature male that has climbed the mountain and he's there.
Alpha
and he's
dominant.
Got a beard. Yes. Wow. This is a man that could command a room and could tell me to go shave my beard and I'd have to listen.
I think of Sean Connery as like probably the original one.
That's what the article says. Like Sean, really? Connery. Yeah, he's one of the guys that set the standard for achievement beard. It's fantastic.
A pioneer.
That's something. That's a goal for both of you guys to get to a place where you can grow a handsome beard.
Like if I were to grow a beard now, I just have to live with knowing that I have a lesser beard than an achievement beard.
Yeah, you're just kind of like a jerk growing a beard that hasn't done anything yet.
It'd be a pre-achievement beard.
Yeah.
It's something to aspire to. You know, the guy that was driving the bus I took home today had an amazing beard. And he was in his 60s, so I would consider that an achievement beard. He was driving the 80 bus route.
I think we'd have to clear that with this New Yorker guy and see if that is truly an achievement beard. I don't know.
It's a free bus that serves all of campus, Dave. I don't know if we need to check with anybody. That's an achievement beard.
Well, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful that this man, he's gotten to the mountaintop and he's decided just to serve others. That's beautiful.
Well, speaking of serving others, I want to tell you about a town in rural Texas. It's about 20, 30 miles, let's see, southeast, I think, of Austin. And this town is incredible. It's called Bastrop, Texas, and they have established a historic chicken sanctuary.
Oh, okay.
There's a stretch of paved road. It's called Farm Street, and chicken are protected. They can wander and roam free on this paved street in Texas. So there's about 8,000 people in the town, but the birds are just free-ranging, free-roaming, and people can't mess with them. Traffic has to stop for them. They kind of rule the town. And there's a Wall Street Journal article that features this town's efforts to control the bird population, to establish rules, and make sure that they're able to wander free but still maintain a town, basically. The mayor said that normally everything goes okay, but they had a bad rooster last year. Did some flower bed scratching, some other offenses. And so Ken Kesselis organized a posse.
Oh, boy.
He's a 68-year-old retired Episcopal preacher. He said, we didn't have any luck because it was a senior posse. They weren't fast enough to catch the bird. So they recruited the next day, got some neighborhood teenagers and a fishing net, and they caught that rooster, took it out several miles and let it free, and now it hasn't caused any problems yet. But it was in this article, it was outlining several other towns have had similar problems. In Key West, Florida, they had a big problem because there's a guy, he was a city commissioner, his name is Fat Tony Yanez.
Oh yeah, I know
he
him
said,
well.
There's a big problem because these birds screw like rabbits, and they don't have any predators. And he proposed a $2 bounty for all the dead birds, if people could bring them. But the chicken lovers rose up and said, we want to protect our chickens. So he's facing a big election battle against the chicken defender.
Yeah.
So
typically when I think chicken lover, I think someone that enjoys a bucket of KFC. But yeah. this is a different kind of chicken lover.
Well, every once in a while this happens. They said there was a chicken napping on Farm Street in Bastrop. A lady was just driving down the street, jumped out of the car, grabbed a chicken, got back in the car, and drove off. They assume that she ate it for lunch. They haven't seen the chicken since. But if you do trap or danger or harm a chicken, there's a non-binding city ordinance. They can fine you. They can call you up. They deal with it on a complaint-by-complaint basis. They just really look after their chickens there. And it sounds like a really wonderful place to, if you have an aging chicken, you want to send it somewhere to retire, good weather, and live in peace, coexist with humans. Bastrop, Texas is your place.
Well, I'm grateful for their service. That's beautiful. So we've got Bastrop, Texas, a place for wild chickens, the Achievement Beard, and of course the Scrabble Champion that can speak no French, but won the French Scrabble. These are all good things. You bring these up at a dinner party or just at work around the water cooler, people are going to think that you're awesome.
Yeah, you're halfway there.
So I'm excited about the next segment. I don't really know how this is going to go, but we've got some topics that are open for debate. And I think we're going to try and, I don't know, what do you think, kind of move through them quickly, make some major points, and then move to the next one. What do you guys think?
Yeah, definitely. We'll have to leave it to our listeners to decide who won the debate.
All right. Are you guys ready for the first topic?
Born ready.
So this one's important to my heart. Willy Wonka, artistic genius or weird candy guy?
I think I'll take this one first. There's no doubt about it. Willy Wonka was a weird candy guy. I don't have a lot of Willy Wonka experience. I really only know the first film with Gene Wilder. But just the look at the guy's eyes, the hair, bringing a bunch of children to his home so he can adopt one of them, sounds sketchy. I think he should have been on some kind of offender registry, most likely. Enticing them with candy. The only thing that was missing was like a van with tinted windows and a big mural painted on the side. Guy was a weird candy creep. That's all I have to say.
Jeez. You going to weigh in on this one, Matt?
Yeah, I'm trying to look at him objectively, but I've got to agree mostly. And, you know, the two different Willy Wonkas, like Johnny Depp is, I mean, he's by far the more disturbing one. Gene Wilder, there's things to like about him. You know, you can kind of see where he's coming from a little bit more. But overall, I think it's pretty disturbing all around. I agree.
Yeah, Velvet Jacket.
Plus, let me tell you,
Wonka.
Let me explain.
One letter away from Wanka, Dave. One letter.
You guys are just. This is ridiculous.
A
Visionary.
Willy Wanka. Dave, what is
Visionary.
A Willy Wanka?
Hey, have you seen the film? Have you seen what he did? You can lick the wallpaper and taste it. You can drink soda and float to the top of the sky, and you just burp, you come down. This guy is on the cutting edge of candy technology. Of course he's a little unhinged. And if you want to talk about the Johnny Depp version, then yeah, that guy needs to be in prison. But I'm talking Gene Wilder. He's just out there. He's having a good time, and he sees a need, and he fills it with wonderful candy inventions. And he knows he can't go on forever. So of course he's going to invite a child to be this heir and teach him how to be an artistic genius with candy. You read the book and you can see what he does, and it's just beautiful.
I have to say, Dave, in your defense, I mean, on your side of the argument, I think you appreciate the art of confectionery much more than the average person. I mean, I had never thought of making great candy as an art form, but I think you have a compelling argument.
Yeah, I'm not a guy that likes interesting food. I'll eat stuff that tastes nice, but if you put interesting candy in front of me, like, you have me. You can tell me to shave my beard and I'll do it, even if you don't have an achievement beard. So he's an artistic genius. I think it just takes someone that can appreciate the art to really appreciate the genius.
Okay.
Which brings me to my next one, where, again, I think me and you're going to be on opposite sides. Poems should rhyme, or maybe they don't have to.
Matt, you want to lead this one off? This one's obvious. I don't even know that there's not even two sides of this debate. But Dave wants to represent the 17th century, it sounds like.
So poetry is a struggle for me. I want to appreciate poetry. I don't think that my mind is broad enough to wrap all the way around it. But I will say, it's nice to have a nice rhyme every once in a while. You know, it feels good. It's fun to say. It's fun to read. But I think that my favorite poems that I have read, I appreciate usually poems that don't follow that structure, that can kind of wander around. The other week, I listened to your guys' episode where you read a couple of poems. I enjoyed both of them very much. It felt more like a story, and that's definitely where I would, you know, lean towards.
So, and I feel terrible because I read a quote unquote poem that didn't rhyme, and
you lost the face off,
and I did lose, and I know why I lost. Like, I've come. This is my come to Jesus moment. I lost because the poem didn't rhyme. Like, clearly, if you want to appeal to the masses, you want your poem to rhyme. What are the most popular poems? Any limerick and anything Shel Silverstein has written. Everyone in the United States loves those two things. If you want your poetry to actually reach people, you got to make it rhyme.
And I would say, if your audience is 12 or under, rhyme is the way to go. The way into children's mind are simple, repeated patterns. So I think you've got a great point, Dave. If we want poetry for children and imbeciles, it should only rhyme.
Then you're selling Shel Silverstein short. We've talked about this before. He was the lyricist for Dr. Hook. And I think we can all recognize that those songs were extremely mature in theme and subject.
Well, I guess I have to give you this debate, Dave. You won. Poetry must rhyme. Next up.
Yes. Apes or bears?
Boy, if I had to pick, apes.
Obviously, apes. They're fun. They got opposable thumbs. Some of them can use tools to get termites to eat them. And you just want to give an ape a hug.
When you go to the zoo and you go to see the apes, you never know what's going to be happening. Sometimes it's self-pleasure. You never get that with bears.
No. When's the last time you've seen a bear urinate or touch itself?
Rarely. They prefer. I mean, the other thing about apes is their incredible strength. I have to say, they're both nimble, they're agile. They're not just muscle-bound brutes.
No,
they can
no.
scale trees. They can walk on their knuckles. They can do just about anything you'd want a large mammal to do.
And they enjoy rhyming poetry. They love it.
Yeah, Chemo, that ape, you should just rhyme up a storm with her hand signals. Teach a bear
what
to
do you
rhyme
have to say to that,
over
Matt?
My dead
what do you
body.
Got?
Bears can't rhyme worth shit.
Guys, I'm a bear guy. I don't never thought about it a whole lot, but you know, if it came down to it, I have more of a chance of running into a bear where I live than an ape. I appreciate bears, brown bears, black bears, grizzly bears, Kodiaks. I think it's pretty cool. They're family oriented. I think that they're a cool species. And a lot of the same things that you guys said as pros for apes, I feel like bears qualify for a lot of those. They're strong. I don't know. They're cool. I'm in.
Claws, grubs.
Inside of the debate.
Bears have.
All right. So cursive, should we still be writing with squiggly lines?
When you frame it that way, it's hard to take the opposite position, huh?
And obviously, I'm in favor of just letting it go. Let's just say goodbye to cursive. It had a good run.
I think cursive is beautiful. I have some of the worst handwriting in human history. My cursive still looks like I'm 8, and I'm left-handed, so I smeared all my letters, especially when I was doing cursive. I had to invent this kind of like hook, claw, finger grab, and write out of cursive just so I wouldn't smear all my letters. So I'm an antagonist. I don't think cursive has any place in a society which respects and values its left-handers.
I enjoy writing in cursive. I've actually just recently started challenging myself to write sentences in cursive, and it's tough, man. It's no joke. But I think that that makes it more rewarding when you finish and you look down at that paper and you sometimes you can't even tell what you just wrote. But I think that it's pretty cool.
Do you have a beautiful cursive script, Matt? Do you make well-formed letters?
No, my cursive is probably about the same as yours. It's exactly the same as when I was in third grade learning cursive. It still looks the same. But I do not remember. I cannot remember, and I'm not committed enough to do a simple, you know, internet search to find out how, but like there's a few letters like Z's and J's, capital J's. I don't remember that. I don't know what to do. So I mix it in and it's different every time, but I enjoy it. It's fun.
I really like the capital L in cursive. That's got some flair.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's a good letter. Fun.
So I'd say we could keep a couple cursive letters. I don't know. I guess it's more efficient because your pen's always moving, but.
And there's certain combinations that are just a good time. Like you just really start flowing. Like if you get an E going right into an R and then another R, like an ERR, I mean, that's good. You know, there's certain letters that kind of slow you down in cursive. So you have to choose wisely your words, but it's pretty good.
You know, I think the word jicama would actually look really good in cursive. We're talking about words in cursive.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're treating it as more of like a free-form jazz art form of handwriting, then I could see where there's still some amount of enjoyment that can be had. I wonder if my girls are going to have to learn cursive. I have no idea.
Do doctors always write their prescriptions in cursive? That's what it looks like to me.
I probably should start writing stuff in cursive because I'm writing my hand-printed notes like for people's bosses and stuff, and it looks like a 13-year-old boy is writing this note. So that must be why doctors write in cursive, because like my printing, it looks like there's no way anyone should believe that this is coming from like a medical authority.
See, that's what would happen if I wrote in cursive. It would be that effect. It would undermine my authority.
So next one I'm excited about because they do duet on a number of songs, but yeah. I still think that you can choose between them. Kenny Rogers or Dolly Parton?
Or?
Yes, or.
This is breaking my heart. I would say yes, please. Both. Kenny and Dolly till I die.
What about you, Matthew?
I am definitely more of a Dolly fan. You know, there's a couple obvious reasons, but I think that just
a couple
overall,
obvious reasons. Whoa!
Oh, sorry, but
it's a family podcast.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but you know, I think that Dolly, I enjoy a female country voice, and I enjoy the emotion that she inflects in her voice. Kenny Rogers, I'm just not buying it. I think that there's more legitimate country male singers that I connect with more. He seems kind of like a phony to me. I'm sorry, guys.
I would say Kenny Rogers would have been a tight tie with Maytel Dolly until the last 10 or 20 years. Have you seen what has happened to his hair?
And his face.
He's just tried to keep it going too long. He hasn't aged gracefully. It's got like a feathered hair cap. And I can't go for that. Dolly, great voice, fantastic songwriter, some attitude, some edge. People seem to love Dolly World. Kenny Rogers Roasters was a bust unless you go to Japan. I guess it's big in Japan.
It's delicious, though, while it lasted. Delicious.
I just think Dolly's got staying power. Love is like a butterfly. Kenny's got a couple good songs, but he's got nothing like that. They're sad ballads.
So I've got two words for you. The Gambler. Yeah. That's all you need. It is the greatest song regarding gambling, being on trains, someone dying on a train that's ever been written. I challenge you to go to any place in America where everyone in the entire room couldn't sing along to The Gambler. If it just starts playing, and you're like, hey, everybody, sing along. Boom. Everybody's singing along. You can't find one Dolly Parton song that's going to do that, that's going to unite America,
Jolene?
Like The Gambler does.
You don't think everybody knows Jolene?
No way.
She just says Jolene over and over again. You don't have to learn that much. Well, see, Dave, the thing that's unfair about this, you didn't say train songs, Kenny Rogers or Dolly Parton, in which it would clearly be Kenny Rogers. You just said, in general, Kenny Rogers or Dolly Parton. And I think we're both right to pick Dolly.
I do. I have to share one short thing. When I was a young man, about 8 or 9, I had a dream. I don't know if I should even share this because it still has scarred me to this day. And Dolly Parton was in my dream. And
wow. This is your entrance into manhood.
Out and I squeezed her chest, and within her chest I felt bones, and I woke up just terrified. And I've never forgotten that dream. And I could never appreciate Dolly because of that dream. It's terrifying.
Wow. I'm glad we played off the chain debate.
We can cut that out. Oh, jeez.
I heard the rumor that Dolly Parton is like covered with sleeve tattoos. She got a bunch of tattoos. Is that true?
Yes, I'll confirm.
Have you ever
it.
Seen her in short sleeves?
I have not. But I've been to Dollywood. It is pretty enjoyable. And I guess if you were just going Dollywood versus Kenny Rogers Roasters, Dollywood wins. It's a great place.
Nice.
All right. Hey, Steele, do you want to pick a few of them that you like?
Yeah. The one I really want, 80s lead men. I don't know who to go with. Phil Collins or Peter Gabriel? I'm expecting you two to have opinions on this.
I've got major opinions. I love Phil Collins. I believe these guys were both frontmen of Genesis at one point. And people would probably say like Peter Gabriel's the better artist, but Phil Collins just appeals to the masses against all odds. The Tarzan soundtrack, that alone.
So many of his songs rhymed.
All of his songs rhyme. Peter Gabriel, he's giving you ones without rhyming structures, like freeform poetry. It's just not going to appeal to the masses.
You know, Dave, I took drum lessons when I was 11 years old from a guy named Andy Heitz, who lived in a trailer that smelled like mildew. He was a balding 30-something-year-old drummer who taught me lessons on a drum pad. I never graduated to the drum kit. I just used the drum pad, single drum pad. Mm. And he worshipped at the altar of Phil Collins. At the end of every lesson, he'd just be like, just go back and listen to this Phil Collins song. That was like in my homework every week, to listen to Phil Collins.
It's so tough to be a drummer and a frontman. Only Phil Collins has done it, and the guy from the Eagles.
the unnamed guy from the Eagles.
I have listened to a lot more Phil Collins than I have Peter Gabriel, undoubtedly, and I respect Phil Collins, what he does. He's very good at what he does, but I can't get past Sledgehammer. Sledgehammer just sets it over the top for me. It's a powerful song. It hits all the right notes for me. It's great. That's kind of where I land in Collins Gabriel debate.
Yeah, like I feel like I think that's a good point. Like Phil Collins hits maybe an 80 and does it 10, 20, 30 times. But Peter Gabriel hit a 99, hit 100. He did it just once, but it was enough.
Yeah. You know, and there's probably other good songs. I don't even know. I really don't even actually listen to the guy, but, you know, for the sake of argument, I'm going to go with Peter Gabriel.
He nailed it once, but Phil just keeps nailing it. I challenge you guys both to watch Tarzan, the Disney animated film, and not cry while listening to Phil Collins sing about apes.
What's the one that he does the song with Bone Thugs and Harmony?
Is that what? Phil Collins?
Yeah, yeah. I'm back. I'm on the Phil Collins side now. Yeah, he does a song with Bone Thugs. So.
What? What? I didn't even know about this.
Yeah.
Take Me Home, it's called. This happened while I was on my mission, so that was a music vacuum.
Yeah, this was pretty late in the Bone Thugs slide into irrelevancy. But
Phil threw him a lifeline. That's what he does. Yeah. He throws people lifelines.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got two crucial questions I want to ask you guys your take on. First one, the card game, Magic the Gathering. Super cool or uncool?
Oh, boy. I went to my sister-in-law's house the other day, and two of my nephews were sorting through their magic cards. You know, they both have glasses. One of them has braces. And I said, guys, this looks pretty nerdy right now. And it was. My nephews are the nicest kids in the world. But if you get out magic cards, it's just nerdy. It just is. I played it.
Did they have a summoner's pack? Because if they have a summoner's pack, I don't know how you could say it's nerdy. I don't even know if that's a thing, but it sounded right. I think I put a picture up for you guys on my honeymoon in San Francisco. Laurel and I were walking through Chinatown, and I saw this scene in front of the closed public library. It was two 9-year-old kids in Chinatown aggressively playing Magic the Gathering just on the street, and they were just dead to the world. Like a car could have blown up, and they would not have looked up. They were into that game. And that's how I knew that Magic the Gathering was strongly, strongly uncool, but totally awesome. Like, really wonderful. That's where I came down on Magic the Gathering. I totally wanted to come back and get a pack and learn how to play.
And that's where I am. It's so nerdy, but I played it in high school in the cafeteria a few times, and
it was
awesome.
Around when we were in high school?
Oh, yeah, dude. It was born, like, in 95.
Oh, man. Went to the wrong high school.
Definitely.
It was Pokemon when I was in elementary school when I was in high school, so I never got into it.
I wish I could disagree with you guys, but I think that there's just something. Nobody that's playing Magic the Gathering is believing that what they're doing is cool. They're doing it because it checks other boxes for them. It's not even like an ironic thing. It's, you know, not some kind of like hipster thing to be cool. It's pure to me, and that's, you know, I've never played it. I never will. I would never do that, but I fully appreciate it.
That sounds great. Last question I have. Turtles or tortoises? I don't even understand this. I don't know the difference, so I need to hear the finer points of debate here. Dave, you're a tortoise guy?
I'm a huge tortoise guy. First of all, a turtle and a tortoise, they look very similar, but a turtle is more of a water creature or a sea creature, while a tortoise is, of course, more of a desert creature. And so
tortoises are large?
As far as I know, yes. They're all gigantic, and I don't think that's true. But the only ones I can picture are these giant ones just very slowly moving and just looking adorable. You just want to put a toddler on the tortoise's back and put like a stick, you know, with like a carrot. So the tortoise is trying to get the carrot. The toddler's back there smiling. Everybody's having a good time because it's a tortoise. A turtle's not giving you any of that.
I will say the Madison Public Zoo is free. They have two large desert tortoises, and they're notorious because almost every time you go, they're humping. We went. Took my son. He's a little over a year old. That was his first experience of watching animals have sex. the male tortoise got up there, and like this really long leg was coming out, and all these kids were staring and pointing, and the other tortoise was like screaming and trying to scuttle away, kind of thing. It was, I think, anti-tortoise. I don't think that's a pro-tortoise argument.
No, you're ruining it.
But they're apparently very active at the zoo. They're notorious. Almost everybody has a public tortoise love story that's been to the Madison Zoo. Do we even need a turtle? But I think, Matt, you're a turtles guy.
Well, you know, that's the thing is I'm not. But I will say that turtles, the thing that sets turtles apart for me is that nobody looks at a tortoise and says, oh, that's a tortoise. You say, oh, that's a turtle. And that's kind of, you know, they won the debate in nature and, you know, with humanity. And that's kind of where I stand on that. But
don't be a snob, Dave. No one knows that it's actually a tortoise. They just call them turtles. It's not Teenage Mutant Ninja Tortoises.
I can't support ignorance, especially when it comes to tortoises.
But you can when it comes to poetry.
No, I am certainly not supporting ignorance there. I'm supporting
whatever
the correct
speaks
form
to the masses.
Poetry.
Whatever speaks to the masses. Turtles speak to the masses, Dave. Tortoises are for elitists.
Dang it. Dang it. This is the coastal
elites. Dave, you had an almost undefeated record, but I think you came to a fiery end.
Yeah.
Well, that's great, though. I mean, I learned a lot about some popular debate topics. We should definitely do this segment again.
Yeah, we've got plenty more. Matt, was there any more debates that you wanted to throw out there?
Oh, no.
Well played.
Actually, you guys had suggested this, but I wanted to see where you guys stood on paying student athletes, the NCAA.
Well,
do you guys have any hot takes on that?
I think I do. These kids are coddled, especially like these football players. They're getting scholarship. They're getting food. They're getting like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of benefits already, and they still are saying it's not enough. I just think about myself in college stocking vending machines so that I could keep going to college at like 6 a.m. And then these guys are like in their free Adidas tracksuits walking around, and they're sad because they can't afford to go out to eat every night.
Dang, Dave. I don't know what to say in response except this. Their coaches, middle-aged white dudes, make millions of dollars to organize them into teams. Thousands of people freely pay hundreds of dollars to watch them play, and all of that money goes to other people. That's like fundamentally unfair. That's the basic premise of slavery. There's no other industry in the United States in which the performers or the labor do all of the work and receive essentially none of the pay. They have 1 year renewable scholarships. If they blow out their knee, the coach is just like, done, see ya. And that's it.
But that's also discounting. You're discounting the scholarships. You're discounting the other benefits. You're also discounting the promotional opportunities that these people have, like Johnny Football.
He can't do anything promotional until he leaves college.
Exactly. But he's only famous because he went to Texas A&M. If he went to Texas El Paso, like, no one would know who Johnny Manziel was. He's famous. It gave him a platform to become famous. But I think that they should be able to make money off their name and their likenesses. If they're going to be in like a video game, they should be paid for it. I think all of those things should be different. But I don't think the school should actually pay the player. But if the school is going to put the player's name on a jersey and sell it, I think that the player should get money for that. But I don't think that the school necessarily needs to pay them to be on the football team because they are. They're scholarship.
That makes sense. I think I have no problem not paying student athletes as long as you're not selling the TV rights for millions of dollars and charging everybody tons of money to come to the games. Like, if you're making that much money off of the games, you've got to give the players some. If you don't want to pay them, you can't be monetizing it and making so much money off of it. It just seems morally wrong to me.
And it's really a debate about two sports and really primarily one. Like, basketball makes money at some schools, but it's football. Football is making tons of money, and all the other athletic programs are not. So that's also where the danger lies. We're just going to pay the meathead guys.
Yeah, I mean, the NCAA tournament, the TV rights, they sell it for like $2 billion, and that's a huge cash cow, but I don't know.
Where do you sit, Matthews?
I see it both ways, but some of the biggest problems that I have is just the corruption within the NCAA that bothers me. And then the other thing is, you know, there are big names. You have your Johnny Footballs or your whoever's, but most of these people can't even get jobs. And so it just seems impossible to me. It seems like something has to change. So that's, I don't know. It seems like a broken system.
I think it will change soon because the NCAA is kind of a corrupt organization. It could be run a lot better in a way that probably would make everyone feel better about what was happening. So that was the debate. We got lots more topics. I think that we'll have to do that again, Steele, because I liked it.
Great.
Let's go to some songs, Unchained Melodies. Guys, I'm excited about this because in our debate, we talked about Willy Wonka, and obviously I won that debate. So because of that, I've selected the Unchained Melodies topic, which is music that Willy Wonka would be way into.
Can I start?
Yeah.
Okay. In the early 90s, there was a compilation album that was like a cover of early morning TV show theme songs that I owned. And on it was a cover of the Archies song Sugar Sugar by Mary Lou Lord and Semisonic. And that's a song, for obvious reasons, that Willy Wonka would be super into. Here's what it sounds like.
All right, the Archie.
Oh.
First 10 seconds, you know exactly when that song was recorded. That's what's so great about that.
That was a heavy 90s feel. And I'm going to say thematically it might fit. I think personality-wise, Willie is beyond that, you know?
That's too pop for him, too mainstream.
Yeah.
All right, so what would he like, Div? Give us a taste.
I will give you a big helping of the Flaming Lips. And this isn't even one of their, like, accessible songs. This is something Willie would be into while he's riding on his friggin' psychedelic boat. This is Watching the Planets.
Is a terrifying man.
Artistic genius. Artistic genius.
Oh, okay.
What do you got,
very different
Matt?
Versions of what Willy Wonka might be into.
That's true. He's an odd man. He's out there.
I felt like Willy Wonka probably could relate to the Silver Jew's candy jail. Seems like kind of his own life. And
whoa. I have to say, I agree 100%. I think there's no doubt in my mind that that was a song Willy Wonka would be super into.
I agree. I think he has a co-writing credit, actually, on that song. So,
okay, since we're on the candy theme, I got one. This one is Sibo Matto, the crazy Japanese rappers who rap about food all the time. And this is their song called The Candy Man.
Oh, of course. These guys, yeah. Everybody knows them.
Pretty sure that song was about the wonk himself.
It's beautiful. He inspires so much from people. And you guys have been going with a food theme, and I'm going more with an artistic genius, weird, high-pitched voice theme. So my next song is by a band called Woods, and I love this song. It's called Pushing Onlys, and I can just imagine me and Willie just having a great afternoon listening to this song.
Polyphonic Spree is what that reminds me of.
It's just beautiful. Actually, their whole catalog is great, but just me and Willy Wonka, I don't know what we'd be doing, like on a canoe maybe, just a bunch of hijinks, and we'd have a great afternoon together with that song.
There's something about every song we've played so far that seems like heavily influenced by drug use. Just saying.
I think Willie liked to get down a little bit. I won't deny it.
Mind altering.
So Matthew, you're going to close us down. What do you got?
Okay. Well, on that note, I'm going to go with a song by Abner J, and it's about Willy Wonka's deep dark secret, his nose candy addiction.
Oh no!
Called cocaine.
Music is high class music. Goes a lot, 101 strings. Why do you think I like cocaine? Cocaine running around my heart, and then running, oh, it running around my brain. I woke up this morning, had a hungry pain. All I wanted for breakfast was some good old cocaine. Come here, mama.
That's great. Do you know anything about that artist, Matt?
I don't know a lot. There's a record label out of Portland called Mississippi Records, and they reissue a lot of old things. So he's just an old-timer, folk, kind of blues kind of a guy, and he loved cocaine, man.
I think he was from Atlanta because he was singing in one of these other songs about it was hard to get cocaine in Atlanta because all these hippies came from New Orleans and other places and bought it all up.
That's frustrating.
That's what they do. They move in and buy up all the good stuff.
Gentrification.
Yeah.
Who knew that was a problem with cocaine as well? Well, I think Willie would love all those songs. And if we could somehow get a copy of this to Gene Wilder, he would love it too. But I'm going to close this down with some book wisdom. And of course, it's from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Fizzy lifting drinks, it said on the next door. Oh, those are fabulous, cried Mr. Wonka. They fill you with bubbles, and the bubbles are full of a special kind of gas. And this gas is so terrifically lifting that it lifts you right off the ground, just like a balloon. And up you go until your head hits the ceiling, and there you stay. But how do you come down again? Asked Charlie. You do a burp, of course, said Mr. Wonka. You do a great big long rude burp, and up comes the gas, and down comes you. But don't drink it outdoors. There's no knowing how high up you'll be carried if you do that. I gave some to an old Oompa Loompa once, out in the backyard, and he went up and up and disappeared out of sight. It was very sad. I never saw him again. He should have burped, Charlie said. Of course he should have burped, said Mr. Wonka. I stood there shouting, burp, you silly ass. Burp, or he'll never come down again. But he didn't, or couldn't, or wouldn't. I don't know which. Maybe he was too polite. He must be on the moon by now. There you have it.
Genius. I think I take it all back. That man is just an artistic genius. Not weird at all.
Well, thanks for being on this week, Matt. We appreciated some of your hard-hitting opinions.
I wish they were harder, but I appreciate you guys having me on. I've been really nervous, and feel free to edit out as much of my rambling as you can, but thank you guys.
Yeah, it was a blast. Great having you, Matt.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Still. Well, yeah, I'll talk to you later, Stillman. Have
Sounds
a good
great,
one.
Great, Dave.
Off the chain. Off the chain. Welcome to this world. It's on the chain.
Oh yeah, the Jews, they won't sell out and be on Spotify. They refuse to do that sort of thing. All I know is they went on a boat ride on a river.
Yeah, man.
You get used to the funk in your man cave.
Nice. Get used to the funk in your man cave.